from the birthplace of radio's greatest era. Now, from New York, it's Radio Night Live with Kevin McCullough. Unlike anything else on radio today, it's a front row seat for great information with today's leading experts. Travel with a third generation travel icon, Linda Perillo. The Fox News Medical All-Stars featuring Dr. Mark Siegel, Dr. Marty McCary, Dr. Jeanette Nishwat, and the OG, Dr. Nicole Sapphire. Legal analysis from former prosecutor and court journalism superstar Imran Ansari and Christine Nicholas. The quintessential heartbeat to New York hospitality. All joining legendary broadcast pro Kevin McCullough on a mission unlike any other. United to bring back New York. Now, live from Studio 111, here's Kevin McCullough.
All right, Kevin McCullough, it is Thursday night, and looky there, it is Imran Ansari. You got both of us on the same night for the first time in probably a month. Imran, it's good to see you, man.
Yeah, good to see you. Good to be back.
How did you like doing the show the week before Thanksgiving by yourself? Was that, I mean, you're an old pro at that now with the whole, you know, legal lowdown and stuff.
But Kevin, you know, there's big shoes to fill when I'm on Legal Night or Radio Night Live with Kevin McCullough and trying to be the guest host there. But I was down at the studio and Ilana was producing and I did my best. I was no Kevin McCullough.
Well,
I certainly tried.
I think the genius is in the team and not in the individual. So that's where we'll leave that tonight. But we missed you when you were away. I trust that you missed me while we were away. People have asked, how was Italy? Italy was fantastic. And we will definitely go back. Next time, though, we're going to have to go to all the southern places because, you know, Rome, Sicily, the Amalfi Coast, those are all
beautiful
bucket list destinations for sure. Anyway, well, it's good to see you. Good to be back on together. So I have a question that may not be in the legal wheelhouse to start the show with, but I want to start on this because I just think it's on everybody's mind. We're back, we're at home, and because we had traveled the week before, we were just like dead on Thanksgiving Day. So, you know, the kids have the Macy's parade on, and we're just kind of like just chilling. And I'm seeing this news story a couple of hours later where the protesters had thrown themselves into the street. They had put super glue all over their hand. Now, just don't even get me started. What kind of dummy puts super glue on their hand to begin with? But they put super glues on their hand and then they stick them to the concrete. And I guess they thought that the cops were going to shut down the parade and people were going to go around them or something, because there they are with super glue on their hand stuck to the street in the middle of the parade. And the cops didn't feel that way. NYPD said, nope, sorry. I'm sorry that you super glued your hand to the concrete, but we're not going to let you stay here. And they start picking him up and you hear the screams from the one guy. He's like, rah! And he's just like going on and on. And I'm like, well, you don't put super glue on your hand next time. So my question for you, Mr. Imran Ansari, the legal, consummate legal expert, if those people knocked on your door and said, hey, we want to sue the NYPD because wrongful injury, we put super glue on our hands and we stuck our hands to the street in New York, but they ripped us off. They ripped our hands off of the concrete. Like, what's the legal balance there? What, like, could conceivably be done? And I know you can sue a ham sandwich for anything, but does it really make sense that people would take legal action? Because people were saying, well, hey, cops better be careful. They're going to be in trouble there. What are your thoughts?
So Kevin, there's a thing called, there's certain codes of conduct for the police, and that's internal. That's not even necessarily statutory or in the law, but there's a certain concept, let's say in an injury case. Let's say one of these people decide to sue NYPD for excessive force, but then they're claiming injuries. But if you're the proximate cause for your injury, meaning your injury wouldn't have occurred but for your own action,
then like maybe putting super glue on your hands?
Exactly. So when you took that super glue, you decided to slather it on your hands and you know, plant them on the ground. You know, the police have to clear the road. You can't obstruct it. And they are able to do what's necessary to do so within the parameters. And you know what? You put the glue on your hand. You put your hand on the street. You're the proximate cause, ultimately, I would say, for your injury. And I think that would be dismissed by a court on a motion for summary judgment at the end of the day. And Kevin, I have to say this. Speaking of the NYPD, I was very, very fortunate to be a guest of the patrol chief of the NYPD, Chief Chell, and who was gracious to give my family some tickets to the bandstand for the Thanksgiving Day parade.
Oh, nice.
It was a once-in-a-lifetime experience. God bless the NYPD for everything they do. In terms of protecting us here in New York, and just the warmth you feel from those officers. And I was treated to that. And I have to say, that could be a once in a lifetime experience. And my kids enjoyed it tremendously. It was just amazing. And I have to say this, the amount of effort that the NYPD puts into an event like the Thanksgiving Day Parade in terms of keeping it safe and people having a good time is tremendous.
It's huge. Like, we don't have really any idea from just watching it or being there, like how much goes into it. But they basically do the equivalent of like the Super Bowl sweep. Like, I mean, there's so much real estate that they have to cover to keep safe, the whole parade route. And with the tensions with Hamas and Israel and all the kind of grouchy cousins that are, barking at each other and stuff, like this is a very tense time. And the fact that they're kind of that calming force is really important. Is that the first time you've taken the family in person to the Thanksgiving Day parade?
It's the first time that my four-year-old son has been to the Thanksgiving Day Parade. I have taken my now seven-year-old daughter and my wife, to the Thanksgiving Day Parade on a freezing day a few years ago. but that was from the street and nothing compared to the grandstand and that treatment, I also experienced the parade as a youth, many freezing mornings. But again, it's a real special thing to see when you're sitting there in the grandstand, near Macy's and seeing everything.
No, there's no doubt about it. And the only time that we've done it in person, because we normally just watch it from the comfort of our pajamas, but we did have someone invite us one year to one of the office buildings that has like a third floor. They have a whole window that looks out the third floor. So you're like right at eye level with like the balloons as they come by, which is kind of fun. And it's across the street, I think, from the library was where this particular office was. And that particular Thanksgiving, I had a fox hit that morning. And so I dropped the family and they went up to the building, and then I did the fox hit, and then I made my way back down to get to the building. And my kids just loved it. But you know what? It was indoors. It was warm. There was food. There was champagne. It was amazing. Not for the kids, just for the grownups. But it was really cool. And if that was the way that you could be guaranteed of doing the parade, I'd probably sign up for it every year. But standing out in the cold, I guess I'm not that thankful on Thanksgiving Day. It's a character flaw, I guess, of sorts. Anyway, he's Imran Ansari. And the lesson of Seg 1 tonight, kiddos, is don't put super glue on your hands and then put your hands on the concrete in front of the Thanksgiving Day parade. You are the proximate cause. Did I do that right? Did I get that right?
You got it.
All right. Okay, cool. When we come back, more legal news of the day. It's Legal Night. It's Radio Night Live. We are super glad that you're with us. Stay here.
Does springtime make you think of more daylight, flowers and trees in bloom, or even spring cleaning? Those are all good, but not as great as the Invite Health Buy One, Get One Free Spring Into Savings event. The sale is on now. Buy any Invite Health product at suggested retail and get the second bottle free. Spring into an Invite store today to learn more about how to stay healthy with help from one of our nutrition experts. Give us a call to order by phone right now at 800-673-2345. That's 800-673-2345. Listen to past shows and informative podcasts all at invitehealth.com. Visit InviteHealth.com for our retail locations and to set up a free nutritional consultation in person or by phone. Take advantage of Invite's limited time buy one get one free spring into savings sale. Contact Invite at 800-673-2345. That number again, 800-673-2345, or go to InviteHealth.com.
Listen to us online at am970theanswer.com. Tune in, iHeart, Alexa, or Odyssey.com.
Hi, Kevin McCullough. Have you heard? Michaels of Brooklyn. They went from 50% to 75%. They are now at 100% capacity. And by reservation, following all the CDC guidelines, they can ensure your safety and the health of their patrons and employees. And now's the time that you can get back to Michaels of Brooklyn and have some of that authentic Italian food. Celebrate Michaels of Brooklyn 100% capacity by joining the Sauce of the Month Club. You'll get a different jar of Michaels of Brooklyn pasta sauce, homemade pasta, and biscotti each month for about 6 months. Each month, receive exquisite sauces ranging from arrabbiata to puttanesca, and of course, their fresh marinara. They're family-owned and operated. It's authentic. Everything is made completely from scratch. Even the sauce that they sell in the grocery stores nationwide, they make it right there at Michaels of Brooklyn. Visit michaelsofbrooklyn.com. Join their Sauce of the Month Club. That's michaelsofbrooklyn.com or call 718-988-7851 for reservations. That's 718-988-7851. Michaels of Brooklyn, serving the community since 1964.
How do you feel? Well, I feel great. And one of the reasons I feel better is because I take Balance of Nature's fruit and veggies in a capsule. They have an amazing story of how this product was developed by Dr. Douglas Howard. It's right there on their website. Balance of Nature receives over 1,000 success stories every single month. They've had hundreds of thousands of customers who've purchased billions of capsules of fruits and veggies over the past 20 years. And you should check it all out on their website. Their products are gluten-free and non-GMO, and they contain no added sugars or synthetics. I think if you're looking for something to make you feel better naturally, you should definitely give Balance of Nature a try. In fact, order it today. Whether you order online or call them direct, you must use the promo code CHARLIE to get this special offer of 35% off. Call them at 800-246-8751 or use discount code CHARLIE. Order online at balanceofnature.com, discount code CHARLIE, to get 35% off. So please check it out right now. That is balanceofnature.com, 800-246-8751, promo code CHARLIE. Check it out.
AM 97, The Answer.
Listen to us online at am970theanswer.com. Tune in, iHeart, Alexa, or odyssey.com.
How did Joe Piscopo start your morning?
We do 4 hours a day. It's live radio. Everybody's listening to AM because you can only get the truth at AM radio. We're 4 hours of live radio, and that's you virtually, roughly, and sometimes more, sometimes three guests an hour, sometimes more. We're working. We're working it.
Listen to Joe Piscopo weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on AM 970. The Answer. Our hosts tell it like it is. No safe spaces here. AM 970. The Answer.
Of all the boys, boys, boys.
And now,
boys,
from boys, New York, boys, back to boys, Radio Night Live. Here's Kevin boys, McCullough.
Of all the boys I've known.
All right, Kevin McCullough and Imran Ansari back together again. I feel like we should have like some sort of theme song, you know, like we're it's like Annie or something. Together at last, you know, whatever. Anyway, welcome to Legal Night. It's a lot of fun. Always learn a lot when Imran's in studio because, man, we live in the day of the legal alphabet soup. Man, it is just so crazy out there. All these cases talking about different things all the time. One of the things this week, Imran, that I had brought to my attention, I didn't see this story originally, but as I thought on it longer and longer, I thought, wow, this is really weird. There's a couple of stories in tonight's pile that relate to the January 6th stuff. And of course, that trial for the former president's coming up soon. And it's been now made known, and I guess I saw this story on NPR, so it's not exactly like a, you know, right-wing outlet, that the special counsel in this case, Jack Smith, actually got a secret search warrant. Now, I'm interested as to why it had to be secret, but anyway, he got a secret search warrant for Trump's Twitter account. And as I read down into the details of this story, it's not just that they could, you know, go take a look at his account and see, you know, what's on there, but they want every communication that emanated from that account to any other direct message, DM, to anybody. They're looking at every person that liked any of the posts that he put up there from a certain date to a certain date. And they want all of the names of the people that had access to go on it and use it and respond to people and all the rest of that stuff. And it looks, I mean, this is pretty like deep dive type stuff. And I'm just curious, Mr. Attorney Man, What is he looking for here? What's the plausible legitimacy of doing this kind of deep dive on the president's Twitter account?
Right. So it's not atypical. I'll have to start with this, though. It's not atypical during a criminal investigation for a prosecutor to get a subpoena in order or a warrant in this case in order to look at a criminal target's social media activity. Typically, as we saw here, I mean, Twitter fought back on that subpoena because Twitter, now X, right, with Elon Musk, right. You know, these social media platforms want to maintain this sort of privacy for those who use the platform. But what was Jack Smith looking for here? I think he's looking for any sort of communication that the president may have had, including private communications, such as quote-unquote DMs or these private messages that you can, you know, send on the social media platforms in order to shore up this case that he's brought against the president. But was this atypical? It's not atypical. It's in fact now just indicative of the day and age that a prosecutor is going to be looking for anything that they can against a criminal defendant. Back in the day, Kevin, right, when it was just you know, landline phones, you know, the prosecutor would tap the phone, right? They would get a warrant from a judge in order to tap a phone. And here, the modern era of that, right, the modern age, you're going to get a warrant to sort of do a deep dive into someone's social media or email or accounts like that. I think that's what's happened here. You know, he wasn't told, right? It was a secret search warrant. There was no information given to Donald Trump that this was going to happen. Is that something which is atypical? You never want to, I'm going to now just take Donald Trump out of the equation, Kevin.
Right, right. It's not, try to normalize this for
right.
us.
A prosecutor doesn't want their target to know that they're being looked at or investigated, right? So you don't want a spoliation, meaning, you know, a destruction of evidence, a deletion of whatever messages or files that make the search for evidence all the more harder for a prosecutor or law enforcement. So that's not really atypical. But I think it just shows that, you know, what's really interesting is Trump has harnessed social media in such a way and powerfully, right, you know, to really get his supporters behind him, to make his voice known. And no matter what you think about what he's saying, you know, it definitely has been a tool that's been effective for Trump to get his message out there. So it doesn't surprise me that Jack Smith isn't going to be looking at other things. I mean, one of the first things or one of the big important things that he wants to look for evidence vis-a-vis a warrant would be Donald Trump's Twitter account. So I think that's what we have here.
Well, what's interesting is, and I think that this may, in the end, not be very helpful to him, because if he's trying to prove some sort of collusion, right? So if and I don't know that the case is a racketeering case, but if he's trying to say that Trump was organizing the protests and he was, you know, kind of sending the as the field general, the marching orders to the people and so forth. If that's in the DMs, it'll be in the DMs and that'll be publicized and everybody will know it and it'll be very obvious. I think my hunch is that the president didn't do that kind of stuff and that this is largely going to be not that big of a deal, actually, at the end of the day. But I think when consumers, so, and there's kind of a personal angle to this, the president, right around January 6th, did respond to a couple of things that I had tweeted. He retweeted a couple of things when I had made significant points about the election. And I was following a lot of the post-election questions that were being raised about voting abnormalities and that sort of thing. So I know that he interacted with my content and I know that I interacted with his. I, you know, responded and reposted and did some of that stuff. The thing that went through my head when people were reporting on this was that, you know, is Jack Smith looking into every person that liked something on his page? That's the obvious kind of conclusion that people come to. And then I see this other story today that is out that says that the administration, it doesn't say Jack Smith, it says the administration has changed the function of the air marshals that since 9/11 have been primarily on airline activity, trying to trace terrorists and make sure that terrorists aren't going, you know, where they shouldn't go and so forth, that there's this new program called Quiet Skies that they have been assigned to, which is tracking every individual that flew on January 6th or the day before, or the day after, like coming in and out of DC, whether they were even at the Capitol, whether they even had anything to do with anything or not. They're looking at the manifest of every plane that had people coming and going. When you combine that with the, they're going down to see which account liked which comment the president had on his Twitter page. It has the aura, whether it's intended or not, whether it's precise or not, it has the aura of a very kind of police state kind of feel, like they're really, like, you know, wanting to get up the, you know, the microscope on every single person here. And I don't know that Americans are used to hearing their judicial system and government being used that way, particularly against them. And again, I personalized a little bit because, you know, I'm going, well, wait a minute, he liked a couple of the things I said.
Yeah, I mean, you know, at some point, and this is an issue that has been raised in various times throughout our nation's history, about what, to what extent does the government have a right to intrude into private citizens' personal lives, including travel, right? And I guess you give up some of the expectations of privacy when you travel, right? You know, your information, be it your pedigree information, your you know, biological data, your history, in many ways, is an open book when you fly, right? And for the right reasons. We don't want terrorists to get through the radar, under the radar, and on a plane. But, you know, that comes with limitations.
Okay, hold that thought. We'll come back on the limitations on the other side of the break. It's legal night, and we're getting to a really interesting point. I want Imran to have plenty of time. Stay with us.
With SRN News, I'm Keith Peters, reporting a white supremacist Idaho prison gang member and an accomplice are in custody after a brazen attack to free the inmate in transit from a Boise hospital. And investigators are now looking into whether they committed two killings while on the run. Authorities said Thursday that escaped inmate Skylar Mead and his accomplice Nicholas Umfenauer are members of the Aryan Knights gang who were arrested Thursday. Secretary of State Frank LaRose has joined other Ohio office holders in backing his former rival, Republican Senate nominee Bernie Moreno. LaRose's endorsement Thursday follows a bruising and expensive primary. Moreno faces third-term U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown, among the nation's most vulnerable Democrats. On Wall Street, the Dow by 269 points. More details at srnnews.com.
Want more of AM 970 The Answer and our hosts? Then interact with us. Follow us on Twitter for breaking news, what's coming up on the radio, thoughts from our hosts, deals from our advertisers, and more. Our handle is at AM 970 The Answer. Come on, tweet with us.
Courage. I learned it from my adoptive mom.
Hold my hand.
You hold my hand.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
War has played a key role in the history of the United States, from the nation's founding right down to the present. Wars made the United States independent, kept it together, increased its size, and established it as a global superpower. Hi, I'm James Early, host of the Key Battles of American History podcast. In each episode, I discuss American history through the lens of the most important battles of America's wars. To start listening now, go to ParthenonPodcast.com or search Key Battles of American History on your favorite podcasting platform.
Listen to us online at AM970TheAnswer.com. Tune in, iHeart, Alexa, or Odyssey.com.
Here are the official rules for AM970 The Answer giveaways. Contestants are prohibited from winning more than once during any six-month period. Employees of Salem Media of New York, LLC, affiliated companies, agents, and their immediate families are ineligible to win. When we give you the signal, call AM970 for a chance to win. Winners are chosen at random. Winners are responsible for taxes, if any. All federal, state, and local laws apply. All participants hold AM 970, its parent company, affiliates, and agents harmless. To obtain the names of winners, send an email request to contact@nycradio.com. Complete giveaway rules are available at the AM 970 studios and offices during regular business hours or online at am970theanswer.com.
Hi, Kevin McCullough. Wish there was an easier way to navigate the world of real estate. If only there was a way to learn from the best. Well, now there is. Saturdays at 10, our very own Dottie Herman, vice chair of Douglas Elliman, gives you the inside track to what is hot in real estate. Stay one step ahead in today's seller's market as Dottie gives her tips on how to make it through the tricky waters. Doesn't matter if you're new to the game or a seasoned vet, you need to listen to Eye on Real Estate. Dottie and her team of experts will guide you as sellers and buyers to make sure you're getting the best value for your property. Whether you want to become a real estate agent or work within the business, there is no better person to learn from than the great Dottie Herman. Why? Because she is the best. Period. So tune in, Eye on Real Estate, Saturdays at 10 on AM 970 The Answer. That's Eye on Real Estate, Saturday mornings at 10 o'clock on AM 970 The Answer.
Brandon Tatum, weeknights at 8 on AM 970 The Answer.
Breaking news and local news. Find it on our website, am970theanswer.com.
And now, from New York, back to Radio Night Live. Here's Kevin McCullough.
Welcome back. It's Legal Night. And if you're just joining us and you missed the last segment, we're talking a little bit about a couple of these techniques that are being implemented as the January 6th trial for the president comes closer. The prosecutor in that case has been given a search warrant to not just look at his general Twitter account, but to go into the very inner workings of everything about the account, who commented on what post, who liked what post, what DMs were sent, who they were talking to, who operated the page, et cetera, et cetera. And kind of simultaneously, this story has come out that is showing that the air marshals have been reassigned from their kind of post 9/11 duty of monitoring airline travel for terrorists that are, you know, wishing America ill, to now doing what it's being called quiet skies. And they're actually tracking the movements of people that were in or around Washington, D.C. on January 6th, that day following the riot in the Capitol and so forth. So, Imran, just before the break, you said that we are public people. And when we do things on public transportation and in public ways, we give up that. I know that we agree not to carry certain things with us on airplanes and stuff because general safety and so forth. But you were about to turn a corner there. What was the next point?
Right. So I mean, addressing this particular program, this Quiet Skies program, and it was noted that from an air marshal, National Counsel Sonia Labasco, the TSA is having these marshals now track individuals who were in the D.C. Area, who traveled to D.C. on January 6th, regardless of whether they were at the Capitol, regardless if there's any evidence to show that they were even involved in any of the activities at the Capitol on January 6th. And to that extent, that's a very overbroad means of tracking and surveillance, right? Because ultimately, Kevin, it is surveillance. If you're monitoring the travels of certain people who were traveling to Washington, D.C. on January 6th, now that's such a broad category. That's such a broad application of surveillance on certain people that you have to ask yourself, have you now transcended the bounds of the limitations of being able to track that? And we've talked about when you start traveling on airplanes and avail yourself of air travel, you're giving up certain rights of privacy and you're being screened, you're going through security, etc. But, you know, to what extent is that applied? If it's such a broad category to say that we're going to track people who may have flown to D.C. on January 6th. And, you know, that's where you start asking yourself, well, are certain rights being now degraded, so to say, because these application of this this program is being applied so broadly and without any sort of specificity as to the individual.
So let me ask you as a prosecutor, because I think obviously there's the worst case scenario, the best case scenario, and then there's the practical scenario, like what would be necessary and needed. If you were to press, if you were, you know, conducting a trial, you were prosecuting, and you said, I need to know, you know, where these people went and came from around those dates, what do you think the criteria would normally be that a judge would say you can have that knowledge? Would they limit it typically in the willingness to give you permission to do that? And do you think that what this is doing is going beyond what normally a judge would authorize, like a prosecutor, to be allowed to do?
Yeah, I think it's a little broad. I don't know what extent the TSA or marshals, et cetera, are gathering this information, what are they using it for, and to what, to how deep of a dive they're doing on these individuals who have traveled to the nation's capital on January 6th, whether you have been involved with what happened at the Capitol or not. But let's just say what you would look for, let's say permission from a judge in order to surveil or have a search warrant in terms of, you know, surveilling someone's travel or getting their records and whatnot. I mean, you would have to articulate before the judge some sort of reasonable suspicion, that there's some criminality afoot. And that there's this necessity in order for a judge to order that sort of surveillance into someone's.
So it's that reasonable suspicion that seems to be missing in this particular program. It just seems like it's a wide net and they're trying to just catch whatever jumps into it.
And Kevin, I think that's why, you know, some people are flagging this as problematic, because it isn't specific to any individual or even a group of individuals. It just appears to be anyone who traveled to the D.C. region that day now may find themselves under scrutiny. They may not even know it. Right. So they may not realize that they're undergoing the scrutiny. But certainly if what we take from this information is true, it could be problematic because it's not being applied in a narrow sense. It's not targeted, but rather broad. And can the government do that? That would be a question that may have to be answered if someone decides to say, nope, this is going too far and I'm going to challenge it in court.
So, and if you had someone who got brought up on something and this was how they snagged them, that would be one of the things you would point out. Say, well, we don't know that you had, you know, the rights to do that at that point. Okay, let's take another break. Come right back. Still lots of legal news to get to. It's Legal Night. He's Imran. I'm Kevin. Don't go away.
Sometimes the most compelling stories come from the most unexpected places. Picture this. You're just a 14-year-old boy, abruptly awakened by a solemn priest at your boarding school. Your father's been shot, and you're rushed to his side in Los Angeles. But as you stand by his bedside, witnessing his final moments, you can't shake the memories of another tragedy years before, when your uncle, the president, met a similar fate. As you journey back, the train moves sluggishly, every inch weighed down by a nation mourning your father's loss. Life throws curveballs, and for Robert Kennedy Jr., it was a journey marked by highs and lows. His story is one of resilience, tragedy, and redemption. The Real RFK Jr., the most important documentary of the year. Witness his incredible journey and his legacy. For a limited time, watch it free at therfkmovie.com. The Real RFK Jr., a story that needs to be told. Visit therfkmovie.com now.
When it comes to health, we're all on our own journey. Our challenges aren't always visible to those around us. You may be living with aches and pains, fatigue, shortness of breath, or other symptoms that make it difficult to manage everyday life. These problems can be the result of a variety of conditions, including long COVID, which 1 in 5 adults who've had COVID-19 may develop, according to the CDC. When symptoms linger, they could lead to feelings of isolation, but you don't have to go through it alone. For challenges like these, physical therapy is the solution. Physical therapists are the licensed healthcare providers moving you to better health. They can improve your quality of life through hands-on care, patient education, and prescribed movement. No matter where you are on your health journey, your physical therapist and physical therapist assistant can help. When we work together, we feel better together. So choose more movement. Choose better health. Choose physical therapy. Visit ChoosePT.com to find a physical therapist near you or ask your primary care provider for a referral. This message is provided by the American Physical Therapy Association.
Listen to us online at AM970TheAnswer.com. Tune in, iHeart, Alexa, or Odyssey.com.
Charlie Kirk says this is just the start.
President Trump heard the demands of the grassroots. Over 60 people are expected to be fired, terminated, or asked to resign. There is a firing spree going on right now at the RNC. Now, this is just the beginning.
The Charlie Kirk Show, weekdays at noon, right before Dennis Prager at 1 on AM 970. The Answer.
To some people, the sound of a baby babbling doesn't mean much. But that's not necessarily true. By 6 months, they're combining vowels and consonants. By 9 months, they're trying out different kinds of sounds. And by 12 months, their babbling is beginning to take on some meaning. Especially if there's no babbling at all. Little to no babbling by 12 months or later is just one of the possible signs of autism in children. Early screening and intervention can make a lifetime of difference and unlock a world of possibilities. Take the first step at autismspeaks.org.
America First with Sebastian Gorka. Weekday afternoons at 3 and evenings at 10 on AM 970. The Answer.
Ooh, what a little moonlight can do.
Back to Kevin McCullough, live from New York.
Ooh.
All right, yet to come, we're going to get into some Esquire etiquette with the one and only Mr. Esquire himself, Imran Ansari. But we are first going to turn the tables on you, sir, because we've been talking about all these other legal stories tonight. And you spent the entire day analyzing Young Thug, the rapper. In his case, so for people, and I don't follow rap very closely, I didn't even know he was on trial. So what is what's the story and kind of what was your takeaway today?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, for our listeners, a little background, Young Thug is actually a pretty popular rapper. If that's the genre that you decide to listen to. I think he's won a few Grammys and he has this rap group, Young Slime Life, YSL.
Right? Slime Life?
Yeah. Yes, I had a few chuckles on that. But now the prosecutors in Atlanta, Georgia, right, the same office that has brought RICO claims against Trump et al.
Okay. This is the Fannie Willis office?
Fannie Willis prosecution has brought RICO charges against Young Thug and a slew of co-defendants saying that his rap group, YSL, was not an artistic group, but rather a criminal enterprise that was dealing in drugs, carjackings, murder, controlled substance trafficking, etc. But what is really interesting about this case, Kevin, which implicates the First Amendment, is that prosecutors are using lyrics from Young Thug songs as evidence as to the crimes that they are charging with him.
Well, what did he do? Did he say on March 2nd, we knocked over a convenience store and stole a bottle and took two packs of cigarettes? And that's
the big question, right, Kevin? So you know, the rap genre, in a broad sense, tends to rap, and sometimes it's fantasy and it's sort of, and criticism for this aside, you know, they romanticize criminality and things like that in rap.
No, it's the culture. Yep.
But a lot of it is just artistic expression, right? It's not true. It's just part of the genre. It's reality is that that's what sells records, right? Knowing people who produce this stuff, it sells records. And what is true and what is now just an actual admission or artistic expression is being put to that the test here, Kevin, because they're trying to use some of his lyrics which could be say, all right, is he saying, you know, I had part of that shooting, but I didn't, you know, I forget the exact lyrics, Kevin, but they could be interpreted. Okay, is he admitting to this crime? But on the other side, the defense side, you could be saying, no, this is just a rap lyric. You can't take this seriously. But it's really giving rise to a movement. And I think this may be a real test case, Kevin, there's legislation which is being proposed in Congress that would prevent prosecutors from using rap lyrics as evidence at trial. So there's a movement against this, saying that, you know, First Amendment considerations are foremost here. Artistic expression, which can't be taken literally, should not be used as evidence at criminal trials. So there's a whole movement lobbying here against this. And this Young Thug case is going to be a test case, not only for using RICO, the RICO statute, against hip hop artists and their sort of clique, right? Their record labels and whatnot, and turning that from a record label into a criminal enterprise. But it's going to have real First Amendment considerations here. Can a rapper rap about a possible, you know, false murder, false crime, and be sort of, if they are brought up on charges, can they be insulated from having those lyrics being used against them in the court of law? So it's a really interesting case for so many reasons, Kevin, and it's going to be a long, long trial.
Yeah, I'm sure it will be. I don't know how I feel about the legislation, though, because my thinking is, and I've not spent a lot of time around rap artists, but I've spent a lot of time around musicians that have written songs and have written what would be considered artistic pieces. And a lot of people, whether you're a rap artist or not, write music surrounding their life, real life, real experiences. I, you know, one of the things that when the Taylor Swift album drops, every time it comes out, all the Swifties on planet Earth immediately begin scouring her lyrics to figure out which boy she's talking about, who stole her cardigan and didn't give it back and she lost her virginity to, and all the rest. I mean, that's like the only thing that the fans do. They want to see how much of the song is really like something that happened to her. Right. And I don't know. I'm certainly not against them being allowed to express what they want to express in their form of art. But if you can prove, and I would say that proof needs to be extracurricular to the lyric itself. Like if you had evidence that backed up what the lyric said with DNA and something that was kind of like hard evidence, I would be totally in favor of letting those lyrics be submitted as a piece of the evidence, not the totality of the evidence, but as a piece of them. And I don't know that it should be protected if it's considered like a confession, like if it's an actual admission of, like, when I've never understood this, when murderers are on phone lines and they say to someone, you know, yeah, I knocked him off, and you have him, you have the person saying it to whoever they're talking to, and you know, you bring it into court. Well, you know what, the weren't notified that it was being recorded, so now we have to negate that confession. Well, what does it have to do with the fact that he confessed, that it's like it's real, like it really happened? Shouldn't the law be based on the stuff that really happens, kind of regardless of how that is ultimately expressed one way or the other? I'll give you the last word on this because I know it's really tricky and we don't have all the time in the world to deal with it.
Yeah, no, but you make a great point. And the debate that I was having today on air, you know, on TV covering this trial with my guests, was exactly what you were saying. Of course, if there's some sort of abstract lyric, you know, which doesn't have support or corroboration with hard evidence, then you shouldn't be able to use that, right? Because it's too remote. There needs to be some sort of, you know, if someone is on trial for murdering, you know, killing a someone who was in a clown costume, and then they start rapping, oh, on that day I killed that guy in the clown costume, right? Why that should be used, and it should be fair game because it's so specific, there's no ambiguity to that. And
especially if the guy in the clown costume ended up dead.
Absolutely. You know, and I'm using a very clear cut version, you know, of connecting the dots between the lyric and the crime.
Well, I'm thinking of like the Taylor Swift song where she says, you know, do you wonder where I was on April the 29th? Now, that doesn't mean anything to me because I don't know anything about Taylor Swift's life. But my wife and her 10 best friends that are all Swifties and know everything about which boyfriend she broke up with on April 29th or was supposed to be with. By the way, I think it was Harry Styles. At the end of the day, they connected the dots and it's a real thing. And I don't think that should be just blown off because, well, she was just writing a song. Well, yeah, but it really did happen. Anyway, got to take a break. Esquire Etiquette, stay here.
You have all helped support MyPillow and their employees in these tough economic times. Mike Lindell knows this and continues to give back to listeners with deals on his most popular products. You've heard me recently speak about the My Slippers, Giza Sheets, MyPillow 2.0, and more. Great news! The MyPillow 6-pack bath towel sets are back in stock. They are extremely absorbent, yet still provides that soft feel you look for in a towel. The set comes with 2 bath towels, 2 hand towels, and 2 washcloths. Regular price is $79.98 for a limited time. You can get this 6-pack towel set for only $39.99 with promo code JOEP. That's a 50% savings. Go to MyPillow.com. Call 800-651-0798. Use the promo code JOEP to save 50% on the MyPillow 6-pack towel sets.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
Just a little heads up before something bad happens.
Move your coffee cup away from your computer.
Oh, no, 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 no.
So you can have more control.
Stop. You're texting your boss by mistake.
Uh-oh. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes like managing your weight, getting active, stopping smoking, and eating healthier, you can stop prediabetes before it leads to type 2 diabetes. It's easy to learn your risk. Take the 1-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Warning, the cap is loose on that ketchup.
Ugh. Don't wait. You have the power to change the outcome. Visit doihaveprediabetes.org today. That's doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Sometimes the most compelling stories come from the most unexpected places. Picture this. You're just a 14-year-old boy, abruptly awakened by a solemn priest at your boarding school. Your father's been shot, and you're rushed to his side in Los Angeles. But as you stand by his bedside, witnessing his final moments, you can't shake the memories of another tragedy years before when your uncle, the president, met a similar fate. As you journey back, the train moves sluggishly, every inch weighed down by a nation mourning your father's loss. Life throws curveballs, and for Robert Kennedy Jr., it was a journey marked by highs and lows. His story is one of resilience, tragedy, and redemption. The Real RFK Jr., the most important documentary of the year. Witness his incredible journey and his legacy. For a limited time, watch it free at therfkmovie.com. The Real RFK Jr., a story that needs to be told. Visit therfkmovie.com now.
The Arthur Idala Power Hour. Weeknights at 6 on AM 970, The Answer.
Listen to us online at am970theanswer.com. Tune in, iHeart, Alexa, or Odyssey.com.
Brandon Tatum is next on AM 970, The Answer. Once more from New York, Radio Night Live. Here's Kevin McCullough.
All right, it's Legal Night. Man, the hour has gone fast. It just got us back together again, Imran, and we're going to have to go our separate ways again. But it's time for Esquire Etiquette, and I can't wait to hear what you got for us tonight.
Yeah, so, Kevin, I just want to let our listeners know that they should be careful in so many ways. This is not necessarily inferring that our listeners are going to be conducting criminal conduct or engaging.
Especially if you're a rapper who killed a guy in a clown costume.
Yeah. But be careful what you do and say on social media and what you post. And I've said this before. Of course, we have a great liberty that we all enjoy here, and that's under the First Amendment, and it's always that issue in the courts. It's such a dynamic. It's the First Amendment. It is the backbone of our freedom here in the country to express ourselves the way we want. But you have to be careful about what you say because it has implications in many ways, right? It could be something that offends someone, or it goes to the point of defamation, and then you could find yourself in legal problems, right? So you have to be careful with what you say specifically when you're putting it out there in the public domain. And we've seen this now, especially after the conflict that is still very much underway between Hamas and Israel, people who are really seeing consequences with what they say in the public domain, whether it's supporting, Israel, or whether it's supporting Palestinians. You know, you're expressing your views, and that's a great thing under our First Amendment. But you're also seeing some ramifications people are experiencing in employment.
There's people lost jobs and stuff.
Exactly. And, you know, that's going to be a whole other area, I think, that we see from what we're seeing with these firings and people losing, college, or jobs after college, people who are, you know, really experiencing a lot of things on both sides, right, expressing their views. But, you know, my point is that we enjoy the First Amendment and we enjoy our freedoms, but sometimes there's limitations to that. And even though you want to express yourself, you just got to be careful because you may end up in some sort of legal issue, and it may be more of a headache than a benefit than expressing your views.
I think that's well said. Yeah. And I've often thought that censorship is not a bad thing. Hear me out on this. When it's invoked by yourself, because if you censor yourself to where you only say things that makes sense and are not purposefully trying to hurt people in the process, you are going to be much better off on your own. Like, it won't even matter like what else happens. You won't have inflicted that self-inflicted wound that only goes along with saying the dumb stuff out loud. And so, yes, we do have freedom of speech. Say whatever you want. You have every right to say it. You can pull your hair and scream at the moon at the corner of, 34th and Broadway. But that doesn't mean that what you should do is that. Sometimes it's the discernment is the better part of valor, they say. I think that's really true in what we say out loud, especially.
Absolutely. And Kevin, especially when those verbal sort of points end up turning physical, say at a protest and all that.
Yeah.
Your intelligent point then may take an ugly side, and you may not realize that. And then you're actually giving your quote unquote adversary the upper hand by doing that. So, enjoy your freedom of speech, but do it wisely.
Yeah, no, that's well said. All right, Imran, so much fun seeing you. Thanks for being back. We'll do it again next week.
Thank you, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
Got it. Kevin McCullough, we'll see you tomorrow night with the Friday Fun Edition of Radio Night Live.